Okay, we'll be starting to share in about a minute or two. So everybody please bear with us. In case you happen to have your own copy out there of Mechilat Yo, we're doing Chelek Aleph, page 177. Okay, we'll be starting momentarily. Okay, so we'll start now. There's the piece that we're going to begin is in a section titled the Hanes HaTava, and in small letters it says Inyane Emunah B'Tachon. So Hanes HaTava is of course nature, and Hanes is miracles, and Teva is nature. And I kind of fell into this piece tonight because it's Rosh Chodesh Adar. Right. Okay, fine, it's Rosh Chodesh Adar Aleph, so we still have another 6 weeks until Purim. And I was looking at a piece on Purim, which I don't remember whether we did in this year or not, so at some point someone may have to remind me over the next few weeks, we'll have to see. But this is a piece that kind of deals with similar issues, and the distinction between and the overlap of Nes and Teva is something that's very much a Purim topic to talk about. So it's a good way to kind of slowly build up in Adar Aleph to build up towards the topic of Purim. This will take us, I don't think, at least 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, we'll see, dealing with this topic. Okay, so here we go. Teva Hester Nisan. Right? The title speaks for itself. Teva, nature, is Hester Nisan, is the hiding of Nisan. Mao I have preached to be Nesla Teva. You see where I am at the beginning? Mao I have preached to be Nesla Teva. What is the difference between Nes and Teva? They're both from Hashem. Everybody, I'm talking about believing Jews, right? Someone doesn't believe in Hashem, then there's no such thing as Nisan. But if you believe in Hashem, and you believe Hashem is the creator of the world, so Teva is from Hashem, and Nes is from Hashem. So what's the difference between them? Asha'il zo gam habe me'achinu ha'maminim yilagulon. Even many of achinu ha'maminim, from our brethren who believe in Hashem, many people will mock this question. But Amram, they'll say, V'vani akom many is barach. Certainly, everything is from Hashem. Achateva, hu ashenosin Hashem is barach, chok bebriya. Teva is the laws that Hashem instilled into creation. Shetisnai ben haga mekvelas, so that the world should conduct itself ben haga mekvelas in a certain defined way. V'derech siva amusoveh. In a derech, in a path of siva mesove. Siva mesove means cause and effect, right? Cause and effect. So those who will mark the question, again, the question was, what's the difference between nature and teva? They'll say, what do you mean? The difference is obvious. Teva is something called laws of nature, that Hashem created the world with certain laws of cause and effect so that the world can function the way it does. And that's the way this world, the reality of this whole world is. But on occasion, a time of great need, and for someone who has special chusim, Hashem steps out of this, the parameters that he created. Gedor is a fence. So he'll step outside of that fence of Teva. And he'll do open miracles which have no natural cause. That's why all of the nisim in Torah and Divrei Chazal and Chazal happen. All right. So far, what he's saying is the response that many would have to the question between Nes and Teva. Is Teva is the rules, the laws of nature, that Hashem created the world with those laws, and now that's the way it is, it's cause and effect. When you drop something, it falls, right? And when you, throw something up, it comes back down. And when you take two molecules and you put them together, they'll bond together in the way that they do. Whatever the case may be, on a subatomic level, molecular level, on the cosmic level, there's something called cause and effect, right? Every action has an equal but opposite reaction, right? We know this, the rules of science. So that's Teva. And then on occasion, when the situation calls for it, Hashem will override the system, if you will, right? We have language today that we definitely didn't have, expressions, right? Hashem will override the system and step in and say, okay, I want something else to happen that has nothing to do with the laws that I created. If there's a situation that extending circumstance that calls for it, and a person has tremendous blessing. Yeah, okay, because to have a sentence for individual. If we continue to ask, what is cause and effect? Why does the effect result from the cause? L'mashal, for example, what is it, if we ask these people who gave us this explanation about the difference between Eitz and Teva, why is it that, what is it that triggers the growth of grain, of crops? And the noodle answer, it's a little pushy, it's obvious. Since the land, the earth, was prepared, Bacharisha, Bacharisha, first word on the line, about two-thirds of the way down the paragraph, Bacharisha, that since the earth was prepared with plowing, V'achakach Zaru, then they planted, V'gam Hishku Adama Mayim, and they watered the ground, those are all the natural causes, hagormos, that trigger the growth of the crop, of the grain. And then we'll persist, and we continue to ask them. Why does plowing the ground help the growth? They'll laugh at us and they'll say, you see, that's the way it works. That's the way it is. When you plow the ground and you water it, then things grow, right?
I missed the beginning of the
first part. The different follow. Hari behechlach, and therefore it has to be kemasa malalu, that these actions heimasibos asha chokak Hashem Yisbarach chokavu abolam, that by our observation, we have determined that these are the sibos, these are the actions that Hashem created as a system of laws of nature that in the world, asha sibos salalu, that these triggers, these causes, yigurmus gidatu, will cause the wheat to grow. And that's nature. Right? So that's the way this conversation would go. What's the difference between nature and nisim? Okay, so nature are the laws of nature. And what are laws of nature? It's cause and effect. And what is cause and effect? Well, we see certain things trigger other things. That's cause and effect. And why do these triggers trigger those particular effects? Well, that's the way it is. Hashem made the world that way. Hashem made it that this should trigger that. All right? But after this conversation is over, we have to reflect on this a little bit. Kashinadaik Yosef, when we look into this more carefully, from its amik and more deeply, Tamad Ashele Fineinu, we had the following question. Hein al kapanim lo neda or lo noda hamahalach lama hasiba misaveves hamasoveves. We don't really know why one thing leads to another. Braknoda, all we know is a kachutadi, that's the way it is, right? So, in other words, science really is, and I'm not really a scientist, so I can't fully articulate this, but it seems to me, and I think it's what Rav Dessler is saying, that science is basically observing the observable universe and drawing conclusions kind of like what we just went through, that when we see that that antibiotics will heal an illness. When we see that, there's bacteria that are causing illness, and antibiotics can kill the bacteria that are causing the problem, and so on. But it's, how do we know that? I mean, most of these pharmaceuticals that come with a trial and error, when they talk about what cures cancer, different things that can cure different cancers or help shrink certain cancers, they're constantly trying different things, trial and error. Once they see they hit the jackpot in mice, they start off in mice, and they see that this can take care of, can do something with this cancer, they say, oh, well, we discovered something. How do you discover? We tried 1,000 different things, and we found that this works. Why does this particular thing work and the other things that we thought might work don't work? We may not really know. All right? So, but we know that it does. Haim einze b'emes neis tediri. Isn't it really just a constant neis? Elishur galnabo, but it's simply something you become accustomed to. If every time you throw something that comes down, you know this thing called gravity. But why? Why is that? Right? You're just as easily, I threw it up. What's it doing coming back down? Right? So we know that mass has a gravitational effect on things around it. But why does it? Right? So that's the way it is. So if now here he kind of paints a picture for us that really should get us thinking. Let's imagine for a moment. Ilureinu kever, if you would see a kever, a grave. Ashamesh nikvarbo, that the dead body that was buried in it, farnechal kol besoro, the flesh was all eaten away already. Vila afar, turn into dust, turn into dirt. Vine la'at, but then something happens. La'at, a little bit at a time, little by little, may omer kakev from the depths of that grave, masla smor guf adam. The body of a person starts to pop out, to grow out of the ground, right? You have a dead body buried in the ground. Try to imagine for a moment, okay, you probably water it a little bit just to make sure, right? And the body decays and disintegrates. And from the decayed, disintegrated body, a little head starts popping out, and you keep on watering it, and then the head eventually see the eyes and the nose and the mouth, and eventually a whole person comes out of there, right? Bo'odarachaka comes out of the ground. Kever niftach. And eventually the grave opens up. A living person comes out. What would you say to that, right? So that would be a pretty amazing event. That would be an amazing nes of chiyas ha-mesen, right? Where out of the dead body, a new life and a new human being came forth. That would be amazing in the front pages of every newspaper if it was able to be verified. First would appear, you know, those weird newspapers that you see in the supermarket on your way, right? You know, under Martians that land on Earth, you'd see that human being grows out of a dead body, but eventually they'd catch on and find that this really happened, and this would be amazing, it'd be awesome, right? V'mkein is so, l'man lo nafchen gam zeh b'tzvua. Why don't we see the same thing happening with wheat? And his raspa arutz is just planted in the ground. Bezera nirka. What happens when you plant a seed? The seed rots. Lagami rots away. V'achakach maskel tzmoach b'toch harikavon. And then out of that decayed, disintegrated seed, grows out of it, from that rot, grows out a new plant. Haymeins tzchias hamesim mamish b'li hafrish. Isn't that mamish tzchias hamesim? Right? The dead has come back to life. So why are we not awed and amazed by that? Bevadai kainhu, that's certainly the case. Avala hefresh, and I just heard a report on the radio, NPR, was a fascinating report about cocoons, maybe they had another word for it. You know, so you have the caterpillar, right? The caterpillar builds this cocoon around, and out of that comes the butterfly, the moth of the butterfly. So they're discussing what happens inside that cocoon, right? What happens there? So, you know, you think, you know, a typical person would answer that the caterpillar, that while he's in there, somehow undergoes a metamorphosis, eventually grows wings, and, you know, so something happens, and it changes into a butterfly. But it turns out that if you take that cocoon and you break it open as it's going through the process, you find just liquid in there. There's no caterpillar. The caterpillar disappears completely. It's gone. Right? Chrysalis. So thank you. That's what. And it turns into a butterfly. Do you know more about this? Can you tell me more? Just another word, okay? So all right. And a butterfly comes in. So like it shocked people. You know, the scientists, when they started looking at this, it's not, there's no caterpillar, the caterpillar just is gone. It's gone. And then they went on, I don't remember all the details, it's really very fascinating. It turns out that you have the thinnest layers of the butterfly is in a translucent kind of way, is plastered along the inner lining of the chrysalis, and eventually becomes a butterfly. But anyway, it's just not what you think. It's the caterpillar is gone. The caterpillar is now turned into a butterfly. caterpillar turns into liquid mush, and eventually a butterfly comes out of there. So it's amazing, knowledge, right? It's amazing. It's happening in nature all the time. So why are we not totally blown away by that? So what the answer is obvious. The Vadai Kainhu, certainly the case. Avala Hevish, but the difference is, we are not so accustomed to Tchias HaMeitzah of people. But Tchias HaMeitzah Shel Tzvu HaGalmi, but Tchias HaMeitzah of grain, we're very used to it. Ilo Hayinu Regil LaHefech, if you'd be used to the opposite, right? If you're used to the opposite, if the way, imagine if the way grain or the way fruit reproduced was well, the male tree, the female tree somehow mated, and one day the female tree, you know, that starts developing a little bit of a bump on the trunk, and gets bigger, bigger, and eventually a new tree pops out, right? Okay, so if that ever happened, we would go crazy, right? But it happens with people, doesn't it? So it's just a question we're used to. So if you'd be used to that, if that's the way trees are born, and people were born by burying them in the ground and watering the ground, and eventually a new person would pop out, that's what we'd be used to. So, you know, we would call the Chiyas HaMeitzim a cemetery. Every cemetery would turn into a people field, right? Chiyas HaMeitzim is right. And but seeds, if you took a seed and planted it in the ground, and the wheat grew from that, you say, wow, that's a miracle, that's amazing. And therefore, the conclusion is, as he says in the next sentence, Aval emesi, the truth is, Kein beneis v'teva kol. There is no difference between neis and teva at all. Hakol neisu, everything is in neis. It depends how you define neis under these circumstances. But it's neis, meaning if you look with open eyes, you look in isolation. Now, one of the questions that I like to ponder, and I may brought this up on some other occasion, is what would have happened? Imagine a child. Now what would have happened? What did happen? What was it like there? A child who was born in the year 2448 to creation. That's the year of Yetzias Mitzrayim. He's born right before Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's a baby, right? And Hashem takes us out of Mitzrayim, which was shown. And pretty soon, within the first days or weeks of his life, the month starts to fall, right? And it falls 6 days a week. Shabbos doesn't fall 6 days a week. Shabbos doesn't fall double. And that happens the first year of his life, the second year of his life, and the fourth, and the fifth, and the sixth year, 10 years, bar mitzvah now, and it's been happening all his life. Would he look up at that month and say, wow? Wow, this month falling? This is the norm for him, right? This is the way, that would be nature. 6 days a week, the month falls. On Friday, it happens for the dark portion. Shabbos doesn't fall. It happens for 10 years, for 20 years, for 30 years, for 40 years. 40 years, he's 40 years old, and all he's ever known is the cycle of the month falling. It's like Old Faithful. Right? There's a cycle to it, and that's the way it works. For the month not to fall one day, it would probably be like the sun not coming up. How do you know the sun comes up when you're 40 years old? Because it's been happening for the last 40 years of my life. Every single day, I know the sun comes up every morning. One day the sun doesn't come up, and we have a problem, right? So what's the nace? So why is month such an amazing nace? Because you have to look at it from the perspective of not 40 years. We look at it from the perspective of the whole history of the universe. And out of the whole history of the universe, that only happened for clients over those 40 years. So then you see it's an nace. But if you're living it, you might not see it as an ace at all. So I call it an Kol olam kulo eino shum siba zula tzitzoni yizbarach. The whole world has no siba, no cause, other than the will of Hashem. Things happen and exist only because Hashem wills them so. Ritzono hainu masav an hagasal. His will are Hashem's masim, his actions, and his conduct. Ki kol asher ritzono mishavim e'ilav. Anything Hashem wills into existence exists. That which we call nes, is when Hashem wills an event that we are not accustomed to. And that chiddush, that newness, that uniqueness of that event inspires us to see the Yad Hashem, which really we could see all the time, but we're not, nothing that happens wakes us up to see that, because it happens all the time. We need something different to say, wow. Zesh anu korim teva, and that which you call teva, hu asher ritzonis baruch shiyasmet ofen echad asher niyam regolim bo. That's what Hashem has willed to be something that happens constantly, over and over again, so that we get used to it. And what does that accomplish? Yemakom lenasis adam, it creates an opportunity to test the person. And gab kizeh yiretz ratzon Hashem levad. Will he see Hashem's ratzon, Hashem's involvement, even in that which happened over and over and over again? Oh, Yachshav, or will he think, will he fall into the trap and think, Kimaster Hashem Yisbarach Kochos L'Teva, that Hashem gave over, surrendered, if you will, certain kochos to something called nature, Shabbatoch HaTeva Yish Gam L'Adam Atzmo Koach L'Fol, and therefore, in this world of nature that Hashem has, so to speak, let go of in his thinking, maybe a person also has the ability, L'Fol B'Derech Sivan Sovev, to manipulate it, to get it to work the way he wants to with cause and effect. Well, if you say Teva Nenim B'Metzias Klal, and therefore, according to what we're saying, Teva is not really a reality. It's simply an illusion. To have the opportunity to make the mistake, but also to overcome that temptation to make that mistake and to choose the MS and to see Hashem and everything.
Thank you, Hashem. But Hashem did create the laws of nature.
Like, that's what would say no. There's mm-hmm. say there's no such thing as laws of nature. Hashem sometimes on occasion will something to existence, or will an event into existence in a way that we would not consider ordinary. Or he's constantly willing all of nature into existence in a way that we see it over and over again repetitively, so that we are used to it.
When you say laws of nature,
what that tends to mean is that Hashem created a law and now it functions on its own.
Well, Hashem is putting that in the Bria, like that he's constantly fueling that.
So if he's constantly fueling it, then it is not a law at all, is it? A law is something that has to be by definition. So when you speak about a law of nature, you're saying, you may be tempted to say, Hashem created a law, and now by definition, that law is going to produce the following reality unless Hashem intervenes. But if you're saying that Hashem is constantly willing that law into existence, then it's not a law at all. It's something that Hashem is constantly making. Right?
Like, you look off a cliff and you're going to fall down. It's not a law, but it's
Well, it is a law. I mean, we would call it, I mean, in science, we would call that a law. It's called the law of gravity, right? It's called the law of gravity. But the law of gravity says that there's a certain nature that that by definition means things have to fall down, right? Rav Dessa would want us to say Hashem is constantly willing things into existence, so at any moment, the reason why things are falling down is because Hashem has willed it to fall down. Hashem has willed it that when there's a mess, then it will draw something towards it, and gravity, what we call gravity, will take place. But it's not that it has to be that way. It could just as easily be that things should, and sometimes you have that, the two things will repel each other. And therefore, you know, if you walk off a cliff, you should fly up instead of fall down. So why are we falling down instead of flying up? It's not because there's a law that says it has to be that way. Because right now, Hashem is willing it for it to be to function that way. It happens to be that He willed it to function that way yesterday also. And the day before that, and the day before that, for the last year, for the last 2 years, for the last 1,000 years, for the last 5,000 years, almost 6,000 years. That's what Hashem has willed it, the way He's willed it to be. But it's a constant willingness of Hashem, or the creation of Hashem, the energizing of Hashem, to make that happen at any given moment.
Life's like different, that a person can think chance to make a mistake.
Right, the mistake the person can make is that even the believing person, that Hashem created a system, and now the system functions on its own, and as well as the system's functioning, there's room for me, to operate within the system as well, to see what can I do to manipulate it, what can I do to game the system, what can I do to hack the system to make it work on my terms.
I think we understand, you know, Hashem, the Chadesh, you know, the day, every single day.
The Chadesh, the Chayyam, right.
We understand that, but I think we always were taught that Hashem put these things in place. And it's a little scary because that it feels like maybe I was thinking, like, at the course of time.
Yes. Okay, well, this may never be good. You know, look, we are allowed to study science and to observe the observable universe and say, okay, well, these are the conclusions we're going to draw about the way Hashem wants us to function within this world. In other words, he wants us to be able to function with a certain amount of predictability, right? So he's not going to change the laws on us from one second to the next. And therefore, what is it that he wants us to predict will happen? So, you know, they do an amazing job with the weather, sometimes better than others, but it was really, to me, the way this polar vortex thing, they got that one really good. You know, you didn't find out.
Very often they're not right.
Very often, especially long-term forecasts, and even short-term snow, they always get the snow thing wrong, right? It's going to be something like 2 and 22 inches. Okay, you know, they can't figure out about the snow thing. But the polar vortex, they were really good down to the hour. I mean, you know. When it was coming, when it was going, when it was coldest, now it's below, it was really quite remarkable, right? So on what basis they predict that? I don't know meteorology, but according to what meteorologists observe and how the environment functions, and you can figure out what to expect. We're allowed to function that way. The Baruch allows us to function that way. We have calendars that tell us what time the seeking is, right? I don't know if the thing is going to be this night tomorrow. Maybe Hashem will decide to change his mind and have the sun come up 2 hours later, or 2 hours earlier. No, there's something called Zman Kriyishma, and you work with his mind. And so besides the test that Rav Dessler said nature presents us with, what we call nature presents us with, it also provides us with the predictability that we need in order to function as human beings, and also to function as of the Hashem. Right, you have to know what Shabbos is. You have to know what Yantiv is. It's not called Rosh Chodesh. It's the cycle of the moon. We have it down to a fraction of a second. When the Molad and so on. We that's the way we operate. But like is very often the case, we have to operate on two levels. There's one, the level that we function by, and this is the way we're supposed to function. And then on a deeper level, there has to be an awareness that it doesn't have to be like this at all. That Hashem is the one who's willing every moment into existence, and he's making everything happen directly at any moment. But the way he operates, the way he's chosen to operate, is to create this environment where, based on past performance, we can, for the most part, predict what's going to happen in the future. And then sometimes that's not what happens. In given, the sun did not set, right? So for Yeshua. So that means that day, Hashem decided to act differently. Surprise that you thought just because they did this for the last number of years, whatever it was, the last couple of thousand years, the last 2,500 years, you assumed I'm going to do the same thing every single day. Well, today I decided to do something different. Okay, so that's your surprise. But it was real. But the different thing that happened today happened in a way that was no different than the regular thing that happened yesterday.
Appreciation of Hashem's work. Like, when we see it out of nature, we're like, wow, right? But we should be wow.
You go to the zoo, you should be wow. When you see the sun come up, you should be, and you wake up in the morning, you open your eyes, you should say, wow. Mm-hmm. Say, wow. It's an unbelievable thing. Imagine if nobody had eyes, and one day somebody woke up and he's able to see. I mean, no one had sight, and one day somebody's able to see. He was shouting from the rooftops. So it's an unbelievable thing, right, that he has sight. So what's normal? You know, what's normal, what's not normal. You know, I once saw, these things exist, but I happened to once hold in my hand a Braille sitter. Right? You ever seen anything in Braille? All right.
For the elevator.
Yeah, right. So in a Braille sitter, though, you see, when you see dots on the elevator, you can see that. In a Braille sitter, it's all, bumps, but it's all white. There are no dots. There's no color. It's not black and white. For a very good reason. There's no need to, for the person who needs it, there's no reason to make it black and white. And the person who needs the black and white, you can't figure out what's going on in the Braille sitter anyway. Right? So which I found to be a remarkable thing, by the way, because the Braille did not speak to me at all. I don't know, I couldn't tell anything from it. You have to be a blind person who knows the language of Braille and has that kind of sensitive touch that you need in order to be able to put your hands over that and to start and to go back and forth and to read. So, in other words, I was blind when it came to the Braille sitter. I was blind. I could not see anything there. And the blind person could see so much in that sitter. Not with his eyes, but he sees the thing. So, who's really seeing and who's really not? And what's real and what's not? Okay, so you say, well, this is it. You know, Hashem is making things happen all the time. And that's sight. Sight is the gift that he gives at every moment to be able to see. But if we just stop to reflect for a moment and say, wow, Bokeh Chivrim, like Rabbi Katz always says, you know, when he speaks about the brachos, he says, Rabbi Moshe Katz, he says, before you say the bracha Bokeh Chivrim, he suggests that you close your eyes for 10 seconds. Right? He always adds parenthetically, don't do that while you're driving in case you're on the way to shul. You know, if you say the brachos on the way to shul, they shouldn't do it that way. Right? But close your eyes and feel what it's like. Maybe it makes a big deal. You know, it's not the kind of thing that I was going to do another time to show with it. But you'll hear many, many people come back from Israel talking about the blind museum. There's a blind museum in Israel. And there's a deaf museum there as well, which create environments to feel what it's like to be without sight and without the ability to hear. Right? And then you come out and you see. And I would imagine that if you go through an experience like that, you see and you say, that's amazing. I was once in an environment of complete darkness. It's different than even when you turn off the lights. So we went to, not Mammoth Caves, but it was also in Kentucky. We went to a cave. There was a cave in Kentucky. It was more in eastern Kentucky, near a place called Natural Bridge State Park. Okay? And you need flashlights to go on this hike because it takes you in deep into a cave. And then the stick is to turn off your flashlight. Okay? It says, and you feel like the Choshech of Mitzrayim, right? You feel the Choshech of Mitzrayim. It's complete, I feel complete darkness. But Rachman, that's what a blind person experiences all the time. It's complete darkness, right? Complete darkness. And then something happens and you can see, right? So just because we have that gift every single day, is it any less amazing? If you feel that Hashem right now is giving me the gift of sight, and He's giving it to me again and again, He gives it to me continuously, then we can have an appreciation for something and to feel like it's broken in our lives. But if we just look at the law of nature, that when a baby is born, you know, as a baby develops within the womb and, you know, the fetus develops a certain kind of way, and one of the things that it develops is his eyes and the retina and the pupil and the connections to the brain and so on, so that it can see, okay, so then, you know, then we don't have anything. So, we have nothing to appreciate, and we don't feel like Kodesh Baruch Hu. So that's the choice that we make. Again, just to summarize, science, you know, to suggest there's definitely not a lot of study science, being Tuesday is going to be like this tomorrow, that's not true. We do expect it to be the same, because that's the way Hashem, not because Hashem created laws of nature, it's because Hashem keeps the universe functioning in a way that allows us to assume a certain amount of predictability. But it's not, you know, as they say, whenever you hear advertisements for investments, what do they say? Past performance is no guarantee of future results, right? Just because it happened like that, past doesn't mean it has to happen like that in the future. And when a naze happens, it means that the past performance did not accurately predict what was going to happen in the future because Hashem decided to do something different that day. For the most part, He keeps it predictable. Okay. Second paragraph, page 178. In Yizem, a first for the Vrayim Zichron El Vracha, this idea is first, explicit in the Chazal. The Chazal tells us, the Gemara says as follows. In a bracha, let's first read the quote without the parentheses, and then we'll use the Rashi that just quotes the parentheses to elaborate. In a bracha mitzuya el bedavar hasamim min ha'ayin. Bracha is not to be found except on something that is hidden from the eye. So Rashi defines bracha here, shemizbarech umisrava me'elav. That's something that grows on its own, right? $1 turns into $5. So that's not going to happen if you look at it. But if it's in your pocket or it's in your bank account, it can happen. If it's in your if it's in your investment account, it can happen. Not if you constantly check it. All right. If we're going to say, like those who had the mistaken approach, Ashiyachshav is a tevel mitzias, that nature is an actual reality. This gemara is very difficult. Why should Hashem do miracles to things that you can't see? Why does he find a natural way to give the person that extra bracha? Hamefurish possessor, what this really means is shateva inena mitzias. There never was such a thing as nature. Alarak inishal hester. Teva is hester. Teva is Hashem hides behind the repetition. Vachiz is a name. And if it's only an illusion, so we can make the mistake. So Hashem hides behind, he does the same thing over and over and over and over again, every single day or every single moment. The same things happen that we call science. The same things happen over and over and over again, where a person can be led to believe that that's just the way it is. And therefore, something's hidden from the eye. Hashem has no reason. But it has to get increased in a way that we're used to, or a way that we're not used to. It doesn't make a difference because you're not going to notice it anyway. It's not going to expose HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, Hashem wants to hide behind that repetition, so you should have the challenge of finding him. So, but if something happens, if Hashem decides, because you haven't been checking your investment account lately, Hashem decides somehow to make something shoot up so that you make 20% more, or to put an extra dollar in your pocket, or whatever the case may be, could be it's going to happen that way. And what are you going to say when you reach your hand and you say, hey, $5? Oh, I don't remember when I stuck these $5 in. So, you know, there's a sucker there at some point. So, Adarabba, on the contrary, I will chol open shiyah, well, no matter how, ain't been named Hevish Kal. No matter how it happens, there is really no difference. Shematiz Hiritzoni's Barach, reality is simply the Ratzon of Hashem. Well, Yosim is there, no more than that. Rakimash on a Kurm Teva, but that which we refer to as Teva, is Od Ratzon. There's an additional will on Hashem's part. Shemakal Adon Livchor, that man should have a place to make choices. Baratan Azeh, and that will, Huashi Slavish Sefaneinu, that is garbed in front of us. The Tzuras Kein Teva in an image, in a picture that appears to be nature. I was in a shaf with Davar Sam in Ayin, but none of that applies to something that you can't see. She was got alone in the clouds and never be revealed to us. The Leah alone is Shem Nesem is there, so therefore it does not create a new challenge for us and doesn't in any way stunt our challenge because we don't see it anyway. So if something miraculous happens to a tree in the forest, that nobody's there to observe. So then if for whatever reason Hashem did it, we have no, I mean, this is kind of a very big philosophical question according to this. And that is, when nobody's around, how do things really happen? Do they happen in the way we assume they happen? Or maybe it happens in a completely different kind of way because there's no reason why it should only happen that way. But we'll never be able to know because as soon as we know, it has to happen in the way that we assume it's going to happen. And this touches on existential philosophical questions of what is reality altogether. You know, is anything really happening or is this just our perception in our own minds? I don't want to go there because that really, creates mind games and plays mind games on us. And we have no way of grasping those ideas because we have no way of resolving them. And the same is true for over here. But the idea of Sam and Ayn seems to suggest that on a level where no human being is going to observe it, there really is no reason why Hashem should limit himself to what we observe in our observable universe. And therefore, things can happen in a way that we would call nace because they don't follow the same quote-unquote rules that we observe all the time. which is.
All the time not to talk about things like good things, like not
for that. Is it about
Ayin Hara? No, like if somebody's pregnant or something, not to say.
Yeah, I think that relates more to Ayin Hara. I think people are worried about Ayin Hara, which is a whole other conversation. Okay?
I've heard that a woman doesn't say that she collects money and to give out, and the doctor doesn't look to see how much she has collected, because maybe it'll multiply or something. It's like, I don't know.
Okay, that's 7-9. The people that are not here yet, I just want to repeat what you just said. A Rebbetzin who collects money for whatever the doctor she collects for, and she doctor doesn't count it because then she wants to keep the summum in the ayin factor in place. But I don't know what's in there, and therefore Hashem can make it into anything. Okay?
I heard her say this in a shir, and now I'm hearing this.
Yeah, that would be the idea. Yes, I'm sure she quoted this Gemara, but Matia and Hebracha Mitzuya Ela. For me, let's try to do one more paragraph. Me shigvar amad bin asayon teshal hatava. Someone has already passed this test. Atshin od nesayon avur klas. It's no longer a test for him. Passed the test. He already sees Hashem in all of nature. Sees it. Ein od tzorach shisnag imo min hashemayim b'toch chesedusha. Hashem no longer has to function with him through this, from this place of hiding, so to speak. And so that's why Nisim happened to those people. Behind Amr Chanina ben Dosa, right? The famous story of Chanina ben Dosa. Chanina Dosa's daughter did not have any oil to light with. So he said, use vinegar. And he said, Misham al Hashem el Viyadlik, who Yomal Chumetz Viyadlik. Hashem, who said oil should burn, can tell vinegar to burn. Perish meaning to say, she'ena ro'esh shum hefresh od belibo. He sees no difference in his heart between nes and teva. It's all the same to him whether oil burns or vinegar burns. Meaning to say, and let's just explain this a little bit, is that according to what we're saying now, by observation we find that oil burns. And by observation, we find that vinegar doesn't burn. But that's just to create the challenge that are we going to realize Hashem makes it burn? Or are we going to think there's some law about oil that oil burns, and some law about vinegar that vinegar can't burn? That's nature. So Rav Chanina ben Dosa, he grew beyond that challenge. And when he saw oil burning, he didn't see oil burning, he saw Hashem making it burn. And therefore, he said Hashem can make vinegar burn. I think what we have to understand is that Rav Chanina ben Dosa, when the vinegar functioned as oil, he didn't say, wow, that's amazing. It was amazing to pass, but no more amazing than every Friday when the oil would burn. It was exactly the same thing. For somebody like that, Hashem could say, you know what, there's no point in my keeping up the facade. If the whole point was to hide, think of a person who hides, who comes to the room and hides in order to disguise his identity, right? He's wearing a mask. He's wearing a mask in order to disguise his identity. And someone says, oh, I know you, you're Yanko, all right? So once he's exposed, then what's he going to do? He's going to take off his mask. There's no point to the mask anymore. So Chanina Dosa blew up because he broke his cover. Okay? That's it. Hashem was hiding behind the repetition of oil burning and vinegar not burning. And the point was to hide so that Rav Chanina ben Dosa can discover him, all of us, but Rav Chanina ben Dosa discovered him. For him, it was clear to him that Hashem was behind the oil burning. And then for him to have vinegar burn, Hashem could say, I can do that for you because you get it already. You understand.
But the truth is that we need to function. Like, we don't say, okay, you know, we learn you have to eat your protein, then whatever you do. You can't follow in this state, in this normal order, so that we can be healthy, functional people. We don't go around that, okay, Hashem, I can eat whatever I want, and you're going to keep me healthy. We have to do what we're supposed to do.
Yeah. So, if he wants us to function, Hashem, I already said, Hashem wants to function within the reality he's given us and to work with those predictions. and whatever it means to be healthy, and whatever it means to be normal, whatever it means, you know, and therefore you're not supposed to try to use vinegar in your Shabbos law. Because it would be the most bizarre, strange thing for you if the vinegar worked. It would be bizarre. Like, why is that? Right? But if you reach a point like Mendoza did, it's a very high madriga, where there'd be nothing bizarre about it at all, then there's no reason for it not to work. Now, does that mean therefore he doesn't have to eat breakfast and then he can fast? You know, he did fast, but I don't want to go there. You know, but someone who reaches the point where for him Nes and Teva, the line between Nes and Teva becomes so blurred to the point where it almost doesn't exist. Then we find that there are individuals in the history of Klal Yisrael who live a more supernatural existence. They're not regular people. Mm-hmm. Not exactly regular.
Isn't there still some kind of veil between what reality is and what he sees? Because at the end of the day, he still needed the vinegar.
Right. Excellent point. He still needed the vinegar. Yeah. He wasn't. I think maybe Rav Dessler pointed out, I don't know if it's here or maybe in a different piece, Rav Dessler points out that, or somebody points out, he still needed the vinegar. He still needed fuel for that fire. He didn't say, well, Mishnah Lashon Shial can make the fire burn without anything. Right? Right? So there's different levels. Right?
So, is there like such a thing as a person like I don't know, that's like already like hard to conceptualize, but I guess that's just not like our reality. I don't know how to even ask question, like, I don't know, it's just, like, I'll say, like, Moshe Rabbeinu, like, spoke to Hashem, like, I don't know, upon it. It's just, like, would he need the vinegar? I don't know, like,
I don't know, but he's, like, I know this, he didn't need food, he didn't need food, and he didn't sleep for 40 days before next. That's physically impossible. So he was living a different kind of existence, what?
Yeah, like, on her mouth, and it's just, the fire. Yeah.
So you know, it's the idea of tzaddik goes there, goes to Baruch Hu Mekayim. Tzaddik can make things happen. So because for him, it's and you have Choni Amagel, you know, who stood in a circle, said, "I'm not budging until it rains," right? Okay, but even he needed the rain. In other words, without water, things were not going to grow. So there are different levels to this. But at least. You could say, like, you know, the Rav Chaim Mendoza achieved a certain level of not seeing Hashem in whatever it is that's going to make things burn, but he had not reached a point where nothing is needed at all, and he can and that would have been the same for him as well. Maybe something along those lines. Okay, all right, we will continue next week for Esther Hashem. It's certainly all Nisa.
We have to do our stuff. We have to go through the resumes, and we have to look, and we have to check, and we have to think, what would this, what makes sense with this and that, and then it's all Yad Hashem. Like, and somehow we have to feel like it's not our doing, like, because
it isn't, right?
I think that when we do it through our seichel, that's like a trick. We think, oh yeah, I figured it out and I know how it is. The seichel is a gift from Hashem, I understand. But it's such an
exciting thing. That's true. The nesayin of recognizing that Hashem is making things happen. You're talking about Shadduchim, the same thing is true in Parnassa. Right? It's
right.
Really the same thing.
Right.
That we have a strategies and we have a ways of thinking we're going to make things work.
Right.
And then when it does work, we say, okay, I did a good job. We give ourselves a good pat on the back. Even though most of the time, or certainly a great deal of the time, an honest look will make us realize that the way it happened had nothing to do with any of the brilliant moves and strategies that we employed. You know, people get jobs, and, you know, how do they get the jobs? It's because of all of the copies they put into their resumes and the contacts, and then in the end, the contact that they made had nothing to do with anything that they did, and they landed the job. Okay, so, and same with Shidduchim as well, and sometimes not. And sometimes it does seem to be very connected to what we did. And this is a challenge of every time we put our effort into something, we see results. Whether it's Parnassa, whether it's Shidduchim, whether it's a thousand other things, we have to remember that that we did our Shtadlus, but in the end things resulted the way they did because Hashem made it happen.
Sure.
parking place, like, thank you.
The parking place, right? Yeah. That's a good story. Yeah.
How is it tied to, like, Shidduchim Kasha Kriya Sam? Is there, we have that expression, but again, with this in mind,
Yeah, right. You know, there's a lot of different Torah in that. What that means, Kashi is even increased Amsis. Kashi is even the same about increased Amsis. Does it mean that it's hard for him to do it? Chas v'shalom, it's not hard for him to do increased Amsis. You're right, it's not hard for him.
So
maybe it's a level of intervention, mm-hmm. or it's a level of Shini HaTeva, that maybe the idea is that according to what we're saying, is that Shidduchim are much more prone to Hashem exposing himself more than he wants to than other things. And so Hashem is risking exposing himself, so to speak, more than he wants to, and it takes away a little bit of the Nisayon. The fact of the matter is that we're pretty good at creating the Nisayon anyway. You know, we manage to not see Hashem even when it's so blatant. But apparently, the way Shidduchim work, the Ad Hashem is so blatant that we almost have to blind ourselves to it, not to recognize it. And in that sense, it's like the assumption.
Like it's more speaking from our perspective.
Oh, for sure. Well, either our perspective or the kasha just means the kaviyachol, the reluctance that Hashem has. And just like whenever Hashem does a nes, what we call a nes, a shinei teva, that's not the way he wants the hanhaga to be all the time.
He doesn't want to
expose himself. Right. So that we should find it.
So we finding Hashem is Hashem letting us find him. Like
exposing. Not exposing himself. No, he hides. And he hides behind nature and our job is to see him anyway. Mm-hmm. He's really hiding in plain sight, that's the truth. And that's the irony, because if we take a step back and we appreciate what we have, then we'll see Hashem. He's not hiding at all, but he's hiding in the sense that he's hiding behind the repetition of everything, in a way that makes it seem predictable and makes it seem like a law.
What is this place
that is quoted? That is from Gemara Bava Metzia Daf Mem Beis. Okay, all right.
Thank you.